been a minute. How you been? Good?
I've been well. I've got the Parkinson's, so I've got my battles, but I stay positive. And right now, I was actually working with affected individuals with suicidality. And it goes straight to the issue where, since the turn of the century, there's been a 200% increase in the suicide toll of First Nations people, the descendants of the First Peoples of this continent. And that's an abomination, moral, political, and otherwise. And the political inclination to do nothing, as opposed to an urgent sense of duty to one's fellow sisters and brothers, is just obscene. And all we hear about is we're taking it on board, we're learning lessons, we're becoming informed, we're doing consultations, we'll do roundtables. And every term of government starts all anew. We go nowhere. Nothing hits the ground. Nothing is there for people on the ground who are suffering. 1 in 17 of deaths of First Nations brothers and sisters will be a suicide. That should bring governments to their knees, and that should bring them down to their knees in prayer to do what's right. And they're not doing that. So since the turn of the century, we've had a 200% increase in the death toll of First Nations brothers and sisters. It's gone from 1 in 26 deaths at the turn of the century to suicide, to 1 in 17 deaths of First Nations brothers and sisters 25 years later, a quarter of a century later. But the appalling thing is that it was 100 suicides. You've got to remember that there's 3.8% of the population now descendants of the First Peoples. And there are 3,000-plus suicides of all Australians, which a quarter of them are also migrant-born. So let's not forget they're lost in translation often. But in terms of the highest rate, it's our First Peoples that actually suffer the worst in the 12th biggest economy on the planet. And nearly 100% of those suicides of the First Peoples are people living below the poverty line. But let me get this fact across. At the turn of the century, there were 100 suicides on average a year of our First Peoples, which translates to 1 in 26 deaths of First Peoples, a suicide. And 25 years later, we've had a 200% increase. Now that we're in the fast approach to 300 suicides a year. Last recorded count was 275 the year before. This year is going to be heading to 300. And the trends say that so far, even in this short, brief period. Last year was horrific. And the year before that was 238. The year before that, 220. The year before that, 221. The year before that, 222. The year before that, 196, 165. 152, 148, 143.
The trend's going upwards, and I mean, it's scary to hear that none of this is being reported anywhere. We are hearing everything else.
It's more than scary, Tobias. It's more than scary. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's an abomination. It's reprehensible what's actually going on. And data is being masked. They're not disaggregating. They collectivize and disaggregated to the marginalized. First Nations people die at 1 in 17 deaths, a suicide. Australians by suicide, which is still high, is 1 in 50, which is 2% of the population in terms of deaths each year is a suicide. So 2%, that's horrific at 1 in 50. But our First Peoples, in terms of the First Peoples, are 1 in 17, and a 200% increase in terms of the toll since the turn of the century.
And since our last interview, I had a bit of a look at what you were saying about the mind frame. I don't know what you'd call it, framework or something like that. I can understand its benefits of framing conversations in positive ways or something like that, but it actually feels like an apparatus to control the amount of information that people hear about and the reporting that goes on in suicides.
Well, I agree with you on all fronts, and actually that's what I've been talking about for a long while. It's censorship by omission. You don't mask anything because then you don't know about it, and if you don't know about it, it's never happened, and you can't galvanize public consciousness to change, you know, people's mindsets about ways forward, or even to know about it. If you don't know about something, it's like it never happened. Sometimes it's like a story. Unless you read the book or see the photographs or read the data, you don't know what's going on. You can't be across all things all at once. So that's why the truth must never be censored. And yes, they do some good things in frame the narratives and all that sort of stuff. But in the end, the raw data needs to be scrupulously studied, but always in the public domain. not collectivized and hidden away in numbers. So we don't know about our marginalized peoples. We don't know about our minorities. We don't know about the most affected people on this continent, our First Nations brothers and sisters. And like I said, migrant-born are also at a high rate of suicidality, who come from socioeconomic backgrounds that were impoverished or from war-torn trauma or civil strife.
And I mean, that's the big stressor, is the abject poverty that our First Nations brothers and sisters are subjected to.
Above the poverty line, First Nations brothers and sisters are negligible in terms of suicides, per se. They're at a much, much lower rate, significantly lower rate of suicidality than all other Australians. So that, go figure, that speaks for itself. Nearly 100% of the suicides are below the poverty line. Nearly 100% of the suicides are below the poverty line. They're not killing themselves above the poverty line. They're killing themselves below the poverty line. And for all Australians, what takes your life above the poverty line is many times more likely, whatever the stressor or trigger or combination of those stresses and triggers, to take your life below the poverty line. Many times more likely. And the more crushing the poverty, and in particular the lowest quintile of income base, is the highest proportion of suicidality. So what takes your life above the poverty line is many times more likely to take your life below the poverty line. But for First Nations brothers and sisters, it's even more so. It's many times more the rate of non-First Nations brothers and sisters who live below the poverty line. And like I just said, 100% almost of the suicides of First Nations brothers and sisters are below the poverty line. Given the opportunity to actually enjoy socioeconomic advantage in this country above the poverty line and to aspire, and these opportunities don't exist for all First Nations brothers and sisters because the rapidity of affirmative actions that once was in the 80s and early 90s has dried up and has been done away with. All opportunities have been defunded. But for those who live in poverty, they've got a 1 in 8 chance of dying by suicide.
This is something that absolutely more people need to be talking about and engaging with. Is there any organizations...
No one engages with it. The media, you know, it was a battering ram years ago and got the media to actually start talking about First Nation suicides, more marginalised and desegregated critical risk groups. You know, even FIFOs and construction workers are at a high tolling rate, but people don't know about them. We actually had a Royal Commission of the Veteran Suicides. I fought for a Royal Commission in 2016 strongly and hugely and relentlessly. And we couldn't get it. We couldn't get it. I don't know how we get a Royal Commission for Veteran Suicides, which should have happened, and it did happen. That's good that it did happen. But the risk, the rates are much higher, dramatically much higher, and it's a humanitarian crisis in terms of numbers and rates for First Nations. It's about the highest in the world, brother. It's about the highest in the world. And how we haven't got a Royal Commission speaks volumes to me about the lack of moral, political will for them, for government to bring it on, because it'll bring government to its knees. The major driver for change will have to be improving life circumstances by poverty alleviation. They don't want to do that. They don't want to spend on these lives.
I mean, how dare any government talk about what the situation is in China or human rights abuses around the world when they can't even bring themselves to assess the situation that's happening right here?
Well, you nailed it. It's a human rights abuse. It's a contravention of every piece of humanity that we actually particularise and actually, you know, argue that we have. We're not a humane world. We're not a restorative world. We're not a redemptive society. We're not a life transformative. And we don't care about people who live below the poverty line. It's a classist dialogue. It's imperialism at its worst, and we've got to actually understand that, you know, neoliberalism, imperialism, they're all one and the same. They're a charter of... work for the top end of town, and everybody else is consigned to suffering. But our First Nations brothers and sisters have been through generations of deprivation, through generations of being held back, and held back in ways that no other Australian group or minority or majority has been held back in any way whatsoever. It was only our First Nations brothers and sisters who have been held back generation after generation. And a lot for those entrenched in the permanency of impoverishment that is now the case, every subsequent generation is worse off than what the previous one was. The generations of the impoverished First Peoples in this country are worse off than what their parents, foreparents, and great foreparents actually were generations past. And to think that that's possible after all the suffering that we've actually have historically aggregated and now dish out about what they went through. It's just unimaginable to many people to believe that this is the case today, but it is, and future generations will damn us as we damn the past and indict us as we indict the past, for, and rightly so, to condemn us today as they will in the future, holding these people back. And actually, it's a systematic destruction of people, systematic destruction of society. But it comes down to one thing. They don't want to spend on these people. All they care about is their double trillionaire economy, their five-star ratings, and all the other bullshit under the sun that makes no sense if we're to believe that we're a humane society. We can have charters and articles of human rights, but if we don't live the experience and we don't have equality, what's this life about, brother?
And I mean, saying what you said at the start, it's like an industrialization of the process of reporting and endless reports that ultimately generate zero outcomes or close to zero outcomes.
I can tell you, when I presented at a parliamentary inquiry in 2016, I actually said at the time, in 2016, 9 years ago, in the last 15 years, there have been 700 recommendations from 150 reports, and another 1,500 other recommendations from similar reports, from another 20 reports of a parliamentary nature. These inquiries have just gone on around the clock. And all these recommendations, whether be nutshelled into 15 predominant recommendations, and all we do is recycle and rebadge previous work and go nowhere, anywhere fast, and we don't hit the ground. More money is spent on research than is actually spent on hitting the ground.
And staring down the barrel of an election, I know we both sort of share discontent, would probably be putting it lightly, for the political parties that will be running. What can people do? Vote for the Greens? Is it a vote for the Independents? Is it?
I wouldn't vote for any of them. The Greens aren't any better themselves. They're Labor-like. They're the tinkerers of the edges of social justice. But they're not immersed in social justice. All they do is actually argue a little bit more of what the Laborites are actually arguing or whatever. They're just a narrow corridor of discourse. It would be an abomination if we have Peter Dutton in power, but sometimes you need lunacy to be exposed itself. These people are half their sleeves. All our political parties, even the so-called independents and the Teals and the so-called major parties, or four or five of them or whatever, right? They all argue by veils and layers in a narrow corridor of discourse, and none of them actually bring on community reckoning, none of them actually bring on social justice, none of them actually bring on equality. For me, the most important thing is to actually vote for no one. For me, I don't vote. How can I vote? You know, it's like Marx said, they're conditioning us to vote for the oppressor. Every 4 years we get the opportunity to think wielding some power. We're not. It's not government that runs the nation or whatever, right? It's other forces that actually run the nation. But people like myself and yourself will never get into parliament because they don't want people like yourself and myself to talk things outside that narrow corridor of discourse, and you get punished for it, you get ostracized. So until I see politicians actually stand up for equality, until I see them actually stand up for the life transformative and everybody to have the same rights as anyone else, and the only way you can do that is by actually treating society as humane. And let's not just wash ourselves in the argument that, you know, a lot of people say, and I used to at times too, it became diminished by a constant mantra, you know, the economy should be geared to society rather than society be geared to the economy. Well, not everything has to be about modernization. What needs to be, society needs to be geared to the humane, to instruments of the state working for equality and ensuring the bedrock of equality amongst all people. And that everybody has everything that anybody else has, and no one has any more than what any one individual has. And we shouldn't be at this horrific hegemony and nihilism where trillionaires and billionaires actually rule the roost and have more money. You've seen some of these figures. There are people with $250 billion, $300 billion worth of wealth. That's just depravity. It's not just obscene, it's depravity. Even if you live for 250 years or 700 years or 1,000 years or 10,000 years and earn $10,000 or $20,000 a day, you wouldn't make that much money. You wouldn't come anywhere near what these people already have. And so how can we vote for people that won't actually recalibrate or radicalize what is equality? And I'm talking about an equality that's actually genuine equality, not just people having the right to aspire and all that aspirational rubbish or whatever, that most people will never actually achieve.
really what I'm hearing is that the work that you do and the work that is important to be done and the effort that people should expend is within the community and is in building a groundswell from the bottom, because these people up top won't be moved, and they must, and so we need to be unified against that struggle.
Well, the only thing that will help us and the only thing I can say that gives any hope is actually set us free is the truth. All truth should be raw, unmasked, and the people to be informed. And people like Noam Chomsky got berated for him always speaking out his truth. Others similarly so speak out their truth and they're berated. But without the truth, we're going to get nowhere fast. And often the truth seems implausible. Until it becomes contextualized and we actually are informed in it and break down the narrow corridors of discourse and discourse is not limited to any walls, then we've got some hope of actually shifting consciousness. And you can only shift consciousness if it's informed, a public that's informed, the community reckoning. And we don't have that. So we can say all the philosophical mantras and examine life is better than unexamined life and be all Socratic. Talk like the Stoics about whatever, dish up Plato, Seneca, all these individuals. But, you know, we streamline them into memes that actually serve neoliberal imperialist masters and actually serve a society that keeps us unequal and disheveled and in drudgery, working for a living, working to survive. Wage slavery has to be understood in the context of no form of equality. It's actually slavery. Think about what it actually means. You work your whole life to just survive, to just keep a roof over your head. That's what they want us to actually have, to fight tooth and nail every single day to get up and actually just fight to keep that roof under your head, which may at any point in time be taken away from you.
Collapsed or washed away in the floods like in Queensland and then not covered by insurance and then you're destitute and homeless. It's terrifying.
Yeah. Equality lived a long time ago when the world, in terms of humanity, was young. And we breached those inherent parameters and actually dished up civilization where we made people slaves. So I don't know how civilized society can be when it has enslaved lives and punishes you for actually trying to be free.
Jerry, thanks for your time. See you, brother.